straight ahead, plugging a leak in the state water plant. Lawmakers stepping in to stop a project that would pump thousands of gallons of water out of East Texas. But is it now also time to update the 120-year-old law allowing it? Chairman Cody Harris with us from the Capitol. Republicans considering several ways right now to punish Democrats for their quorum break. One idea would change the state constitution. And State Rep. Richard Hayes says a Democrat has even expressed support for it. But can Democrats defend themselves against the fallout from the quorum break? They are asking why flood relief has yet to make it to the governor. State Rep. Cheryl Cole takes our questions from Austin. And a new trend developing in the Republican race for U.S. Senate. John Cornyn now closing in on Ken Paxton.
Inside Texas Politics with Jason Whiteley starts now.
Thank you for joining us here. Despite a holiday weekend, there is a lot happening politically across our state. First up, the race for U.S. Senate on the Republican side appears to be tightening up. All summer, Ken Paxton had a double-digit lead over John Cornyn. A new survey now shows Paxton might be losing that head start. He's at 42%, Cornyn at 37% in this latest poll from Echelon Insights. It's the third survey this month showing a single-digit race. Polls, of course, are only a snapshot in time. The battle over new political lines in Congress has left the legislature and now heading to court. Two lawsuits now filed over this. The NAACP and LULAC both have sued, arguing the new maps dilute the political power of blacks and minorities. President Trump asked Texas to remake its congressional district so Republicans could keep control of Congress next year. And for those of us constantly upset about the ever-rising property taxes, here is a proposal you might want to watch. It's House Bill 299, the property appraisal lock, and if passed, would lock your home appraisal to your purchase price. Republican State Rep. Shelley Luther introduced it, arguing that to be taxed on an unrealized gain is outrageous. All right, punishing Democrats for that quorum break is next up for the state legislature. One idea they're going to consider changes what a quorum is, reduces it from two-thirds of all members to just a simple majority. And that means Republicans could meet in the House of Representatives without Democrats even there. State Rep. Richard Hayes, a Republican from Denton County, is proposing this and says one Democrat has even expressed support for it.
Representative, welcome to the program here. Let's talk about House Joint Resolution 10. If this were to change the Constitution, voters said, sure, let's do this. Would minority parties ever really have any leverage in Texas?
Well, I don't think it's about leverage and shouldn't be about leverage. Texas is only one of four states that has the two-thirds requirement for a quorum. So 46 states say a majority is a quorum. And that is the rule with most every organization. A majority of your members constitutes a quorum. And the minority party, to kind of answer your question, always has input. You know, we're not enemies. We talk with each other. We work with each other. Probably 85% of the bills we pass are really nonpartisan. There's a few bills every session that seem to get everyone's blood pressure up. But even on those bills, you know, we work with each other. We're on committees together. We're down the hall from each other. We have lunch together. And so it's not so much about leverage. It's about communication. And I think we have excellent communication.
Yeah, there's no question this was a political stunt to break quorum. That's what they are. But, you know, I've been talking to some of your folks, some of your friends on the other side of the aisle, and they say, well, listen, if this were to pass and become part of the state constitution, it would just criminalize dissent.
No, they can still have dissent. They can ask questions during our committee hearings. They can do it on the floor. They can talk to us in the hall. Quite frankly, most of the work is done not on the floor of the House. It's done in the committee. It's done in the halls. It's done over lunch or it's done over dinner when we're working on bills. It's staffer to staffer. And those things, it's just a disservice for those not to happen.
What kind of reaction have you had from your Republican colleagues?
Well, so far it's been excellent. I have 77 members who signed on to the bill. And I'll say even a Democrat has signed on to the bill. Let's say with 76 so far Republicans, one Democrat. And there will be others. A number of the Democrats are okay with it. They just say, hey, we want to trade something for coming on board and supporting this. And I said, okay, well, like, what are you looking for? And they said, well, Why don't we be able to pay our fines, which are about $9,300? Why don't we pay our fines from our campaign funds? Well, the current rule says you have to pay that out of your personal funds. Can't pay it out of your state operating account. You can't pay it out of your campaign. I mean, your campaign funds has to be personal funds. And my response has been, hey, that's above my pay grade. That's a backhaul decision. You need to go talk to the speaker about, you know, that maneuver.
Who is a Democrat that signed on to this so far or expressed agreement with it?
John Bryant. And John,
from Dallas,
you know, lawyer, longtime rep member, longtime U.S. congressman, came back to the House in 2023, and he just says it's good public policy. And that's what we're talking about. What do we want our public policy to be?
Representative, it's good to see you. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, sir. Very nice to be in your program, and thank you for having me.
All right, let's bring in the roundtable to talk about the politics of this. Natalie Haddad is here, a political reporter at WFAA in Dallas. Ashley Godot is political director at KVU in Austin. And Aya Mitra, of course, senior managing editor at the Texas Tribune. Aya, let's start with you. Are you surprised at the strange bedfellows there that John Bryant is on board with this proposal from Richard Hayes?
Yeah, strange bedfellows indeed. But it's kind of an interesting thing when talking about process. You know, in John Bryant's, it sounds like from Representative Hayes, is basically talking about process and that regardless, you still have to govern. And I think that's it's an interesting thing to discuss because, whether you're in the majority or minority, there's still the whole process, too. I think the bigger question here, too, is like, you know, is there still representation in that process? And that's the thing that will probably be debated in this legislation.
Yeah, that's certainly the balance there, too. Well, what are you expecting, Ashley, as far as punishment for Democrats? Because Republicans couldn't even gather enough votes internally for a censure for Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as of right now, we're probably going to stand where we are, right, which is the fines, that you have to pay the fines out of your personal funds. But I think there will be something else that will come. But it's a very tricky, tricky road to walk because, again, you've got to work with these people on the other side of the aisle to get some of your legislation passed.
Yeah, they do have to work together, Natalie. But at the end of the day, I mean, what kind of message does it send if Republicans aren't even on board with this?
You know, censuring is symbolic. Taking away seniority is even harder. I think at the end of the day, GOP knows that they will risk pushback because even though they are the majority and Democrats are the minority, the Democrats still represent so many Texans. So, you know, I think this is just, I'm not surprised by this outcome at all.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, like, you know, Ashley said too, they do have to work together to pass other legislation that may not be as controversial. Guys, thanks so much. Back to you all in just a moment. And a lot more ahead here, including this.
When we come back, the other side of this conversation, State Rep Cheryl Cole, a Democrat from Austin, on what options her party has right now. And is it time to update a 120-year-old state law? Just ask folks in East Texas, worried that one big water project could empty out their aquifer. Chairman Cody Harris on the statewide implications when Inside Texas Politics returns.
Welcome back to Inside Texas Politics. Now to the Democratic response. Our next guest is one of the quorum breakers, State Rep Cheryl Cole, a Democrat representing parts of Austin, who joined us from her office at the Capitol. Representative, welcome back to the program here. Republicans have several ideas to punish quorum breakers. What are you expecting?
Well, first of all, let me say that there's only been a quorum break four times in the last 50 years, so this is an extreme and a rare thing to do. And I'm expecting them to try to silence the voices of the minority. And the only thing, Jason, that we're required to be here to vote on is the budget. It is a tool that is time honored for people in the minority party to utilize to stop legislation that's going forward.
You know, Republicans could not agree on punishment and didn't want to strip seniority from Democrats there. Do you think that opens the door at all for any negotiation?
Well, I certainly am not in favor of making Texas Washington, and I'm hoping that there are more people on the Republican side of the aisle that feels the same way. Of course, the parties want to try to negotiate on these fines and fees.
We just interviewed Representative Richard Hayes, a Republican from Denton County. He's the one that has a proposal to reduce the quorum from two-thirds of all members down to a simple majority. And he said something that surprised me. I just confirmed it. Representative John Bryant, Dallas Democrat, who I know you know, he's fine with that. I texted John Bryant. I said, I just want to make sure I understand this, that you are okay with this and have signed on to it. He says he's fully supports the quorum break. He was involved in it, as you know, but he thinks that if voters elect such slim majorities, those slim majorities still have to govern. What are your thoughts on that? Is this something you could get on board with?
No, I still think that a quorum should be two-thirds of the majority. But, you know, when we're making these rules, you have to realize the party in power might not always be the party in power. And so you want to make the rules with the somewhat eye to fairness to both parties and what is required for them to represent their constituents. And us going on quorum break was definitely a nuclear option that we had to do because the integrity of voting rights was at stake.
Thanks so much for the time.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Jason.
All right, turning now to a big water project in East Texas that is coming to a halt. The state legislature now stepping in to stop a man named Kyle Bass from drilling wells in East Texas and pumping that water out to other parts of the state. There's nothing illegal about it. A 120-year-old law here allows anyone to do this anywhere in Texas. State Rep Cody Harris is a Republican from Palestine who chairs the House Natural Resources Committee and says the state first needs to find out how much water is there to even work with.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time here. Let's start with this study here. What do you expect the study to find?
We don't have a good understanding of the science behind our aquifers throughout East Texas and throughout the entire state of Texas. The Carrizo-Wilcox stretches from, you know, way up in northeast Texas all the way down to the South Texas area. And In reality, we just don't know how much water is there. That's the whole purpose of this study, is to hit pause. We're not saying that we're never going to export water out of East Texas. We're just saying we need to have a really good understanding of how much water is there and how pumping affects that water in the future.
Texans unfamiliar with this may not realize it, but there's a 1904 law that I know you know about called the Rule of Capture, and it allows anyone, a landowner, to pump and own all the water beneath their property, even if it depletes their neighbor's water supply. It seems to me like the Rule of Capture is what needs to be updated here. Why not just go in and amend that?
That's a great question, Jason. You know, in the last special session or the first special session, I did file a bill to change the Rule of Capture. But I did that knowing that, this is a conversation that probably does need to be have over the term of a full interim and going into a full legislative session to go in and figure out the best way to change a law that's been in place for 120 years. Maybe too quick to try to do that in a special session. So absolutely, I agree with you. It's time to modernize the Rule of Capture, but not entirely do away with it. But in reality, oil and gas used to be straight Rule of Capture 100 years ago. And they recognized the need to change that when they understood how it affected property owners. So now we're starting to get to that point where with high capacity water production, neighbors are being impacted in a substantial way, and it's time for the legislature to take a hard look at that.
So is the idea to do the study, find out what you're working with here, and then try to amend it perhaps in the future?
Yeah, I think so. That may not be something that gets done in one session, honestly. Big, big, hard issues like this typically take one or two or three regular sessions to finally get across the finish line.
Kyle Bass is the Texan who wants to extract this water, and he's now threatening to go to court over this. Do you expect that the state might have some exposure here, some damages perhaps, because Bass has purchased these 11,000 acres?
Yeah, I really don't think so. I mean, it is the legislature's role to be stewards of our most precious resources, and we have set up groundwater conservation districts to do that, and we've given the ability for local areas to set up groundwater conservation districts, but they are an extension of the state. And so it is absolutely within the purview of the legislature to step in and say, this is how we think you should do things.
Texas has 9 major aquifers, as you well know here. What's to stop Kyle Bass or any other
entrepreneur or company from going in and you know, different parts of the state and drilling these wells and exporting water right now? What's to stop anyone from doing that?
That's why hitting pause on this project is so important, because I believe that if we don't, you will see a proliferation of these types of export projects throughout Texas, depleting our aquifers. And, you know, we're going to solve the water crisis, and, you know, utilizing the groundwater in East Texas is one day going to be part of that. But I think we need to be going after seawater desalination, brackish groundwater desalination. We've got 8 or 9 million acre feet of unallocated water in Toledo Bend Lake that we can pipe out. So I think that groundwater should be the last resort, because it's such a precious and finite natural resource. But what's to protect people from that happening tomorrow? If they're not inside a groundwater conservation district, just like Houston County is not, and they're part of these projects, there's rule of capture on its face applies. So somebody can go in and pump as much as they want without permitting. So a GCD or groundwater conservation district is really all that's there to protect someone.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the time. Good luck.
Jason, thank you very much for having me.
The roundtable is ready when we come back here on Inside Texas Politics. And keep up with Texas politics all throughout the week. We have a podcast called Y'allitics. New content, fresh interviews. Episodes drop every Sunday wherever you get your podcast, or you can watch them on our Plus app that you can download for free there on your smart TV.
This is Inside Texas Politics with Jason Whiteley.
All right, time now for Reporters Roundtable to put the headlines in perspective. Natalie, Ashley, and I and all back with us here. Ashley, let's start with you in the expanded special session. In the first special session, a bipartisan bill passed allowing people to register same day to vote if they moved within the county, maybe moving down the street or into a different neighborhood. But now legislation in the second special session is undoing that. What's going on?
So there was this kind of alarm, and let's be clear about what this bill was. It just said if you moved within the county, so when you went in and they checked your address, you had already moved. Instead of, you know, having to file a provisional ballot, you would have been able to actually go ahead and cast your actual ballot. But there was calls that was like, oh, no, is this same day voter registration? And we know that that does not get a resounding level of support here in Texas. And so then we eventually had the Texas GOP sending out fundraising emails talking about we must put a stop to this. And Governor Greg Abbott added it to the call to not only stop that, but to also expanding the call to ban all same day voter registration in Texas. And it just seems like this call for this special session just keeps getting longer and longer and longer.
Longer and longer as the days get shorter. Let's talk about the dueling endorsements also that we've seen recently, Natalie. Senator Ted Cruz is getting involved in the Attorney General's race. He backed Chip Roy, a former employee of his. And then Attorney General Ken Paxton has backed a former employee of his, Aaron Wrights, on this. Where do primary voters line up? Behind Cruz or behind Paxton?
My money is on Cruz endorsing rather Mr. Chip Roy. Ted Cruz has a loyal grassroots following. He's got name recognition, and I think Mr. Chip Roy is going to have to really lean into that. He also has to lean into his own name recognition and as a critic of Paxton as well. And also, you know, he's, I think, if anything, what Chip Roy is going to have to worry about outside of any endorsements or not getting endorsements is how he's going to round up any MAGA Republicans, because he's also been a critic of Donald Trump.
Yeah, and those MAGA Republicans are the big primary voters here. I mean, this race was already going to be a big one in the state, Ian, but when you have Ted Cruz getting in this early and Ken Paxton getting this early, I mean, the lines are drawn.
It's a really interesting divide in the primary. And so, as Natalie said, you know, Cruz's endorsement helps Chip Roy kind of buttress support against some of that criticism that he hasn't always been aligned with President Trump. But ultimately, you know, the biggest endorsement will be if President Trump does actually endorse in this race. And that'll be the kind of like the center for the primary.
Yeah. And that's the big endorsement that both sides obviously want, the congressman and Aaron Wrights. We started the program, Ashley, with the news about John Cornyn closing the gap in the Republican race for U.S. Senate with his opponent there. Are you surprised, though, Ken Paxton is losing his lead this early?
No, I'm not surprised at all. I think that there was a lot of, I don't want to hope right around this. But as things continue to come out about AG Paxton, you know, it's really hard to shore up that conservative Christian base when you have things like, you know, you now you're in the middle of a divorce because your wife says she found out about more infidelity and, you know, things of that nature. And I think that what you're really seeing from Cornyn's team is they are pushing that. They are constantly pushing all of this sort of drama that is happening around Paxton and his personal life. And that eventually is going to seep into the primary.
And it seems like it is right now, Natalie. On the one side, you have Cornyn really leaning into, you know, MAGA and President Trump. And on the other side for Paxton, he's kind of mired in this, you know, divorce news that Ashley mentioned.
Yeah, I really want to reiterate what Ashley is saying. A couple of Inside Texas Politics episodes ago, we were talking about endorsements that Paxton may want to seek out. And something I said was skeletons eventually come out of the closet. And now that they are out of the closet, like Ashley said, it's going to be really hard to round up the conservative base when you are going against some of their values.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the last thing here I can think of in the final few seconds is that we still have a long way to go before the March 3rd primary, and these polls are kind of starting to be roller coaster already.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the roller coaster may continue, but I think with Senator Cornyn, this is very promising in the sense of, like, he is locking in some of that support. He is aligning with Trump. And also, you know, don't underestimate the support that he has with the Republican Senate Campaign Committee, too.
Yeah, no, indeed so. He has that long time with them, and D.C. is pulling for him as well, it looks like, too. Guys, thanks so much. We appreciate your insight, and thank you for watching as well. We're back next Sunday to take you inside Texas politics, and we hope to see you then. Take care.